Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Bobby Brink, founder and director of Lions, Tigers, and Bears. Sure, this phrase evokes the Wizard of Oz, particularly fitting, I guess, in this cultural moment embracing Wicked. But there's nothing whimsical about this place. It's a 140-acre animal rescue, sanctuary, and educational facility in San Diego housing, yes, Lions, Tigers, and Bears, as well as additional big cats and assorted other animals. Launched by Brink in 2002 and shepherded by her vision and leadership, Lions, Tigers, and Bears has developed a global reputation for the stellar care afforded its resident animals and the educational opportunities that the sanctuary offers. As one example of those educational efforts, Brink participated in the recent International Captive Wildlife Conference, speaking on a panel called Captive Wildlife Sanctuaries at Forefront, delivering a talk entitled The Bear Truth. That lecture sprang from her long track record over a quarter century, rescuing animals from neglect, abuse, and exploitation. As another measure of her commitment to broad educational outreach, Brink spoke at Comic-Con 2024, raising awareness about the ethical treatment of animals in entertainment. So there's a great deal to discuss when I speak with Bobby Brink in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Elliot Ross, a celebrated photographer whose new book, Crows Ascending, reflects Elliot's work during the pandemic, capturing the birds taking flight near a San Francisco apartment. Ross has manipulated the images, creating a lovely, poignant connection, sort of a small but mighty coffee table book. As you may know, I'm fascinated by crows, and I look forward to learning what drew Elliot to them for this eloquent meditation. Crows Ascending, when I chat with him in just a few minutes later in the show. Right now, let's talk about the sanctuary known as Lions, Tigers, and Bears with its founder, our guest today, Bobby Brink. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Bobby Brink, Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. Over the years, I've kind of found that one trait this radio show shares with animal rescue is the value, educationally and otherwise, of telling stories. For example, later in this program, I hope to ask you to tell me some stories of how certain animals living at the sanctuary ended up there. Those stories, I think, can be illuminating and influential in all kinds of important ways. First, though, because I don't often meet people who rescue bears and big cats, I think it'll be helpful to hear your story. So when did you first rescue an animal, whether it was a cat, a bear, or some other animal initially?
Our first rescue was in 2002. So I actually started working with these animals in the early 90s. I was, I'm from San Diego, but I had moved to Texas to open a restaurant, and in the classified ads, I kept seeing lions, tigers, leopards for sale. And out of curiosity, I answered an ad, and that was pretty life-changing. The lady lived on 5 acres in a mobile home, and she had baby lions, tigers, leopards running around her mobile home floor for sale like a puppy. You could buy one like a puppy and take it home. And she had 30 big cats in the backyard breeding. So, of course, I didn't buy a cat, and I didn't take it home, but I did start volunteering for her, and that's when I really discovered the exotic animal trade and how bad it is. People don't know, second to drugs and weapons in our country. I was just floored by the way animals are treated and money is made, and I answered many more ads, you know, including an ad for bears. And the guy, I told him I wanted to learn how to take care of bears, and I'll teach you. It's like a 1-hour course, and the next thing I know, I'm feeding his bears, and if I don't show up, the bears aren't eating. And I turned that man into everybody. And you know, I kept being told, you know, it's legal, perfectly legal. If the animal can stand up, turn around, has fresh food and water, it's legal. So then I just, you know, kept watching. And then I finally just wanted to open my own place to rescue animals.
So backing up just
first rescue, sorry to answer your question. Our first rescue, 2002, which was 2 tigers, Raja and Natasha.
And I guess backing up a little bit, because one of the things that's interesting about that story is that you were in Texas at the time opening or about to open a restaurant. So what compelled you, do you think, looking back, to answer that particular ad? Why, what was the fascination, or why did you respond to that ad once you saw it in that publication?
Being from San Diego, you don't see a lion, a tiger, and a leopard for sale in the classified ads of the newspaper.
Right, but not everybody responds to that kind of ad either. They don't necessarily say, hey, I got to look into this and maybe make a purchase here.
Well, I didn't make a purchase, but I sure was curious. And, you know, it was amazing to lay on the floor. And, you know, who wouldn't want to touch a baby lion and tiger? And it didn't take long of going there daily to see what she was doing was just so wrong. And in the day, like, she was breeding these animals for Disney, for Siegfried and Roy, for MGM, for, like, for big names. A lot of, you know, and a lot of people don't know these animals. They're surplus animals. That's how they've gotten out in the private sector, and then the private sector could do anything. When I first started Lions, Tigers, and Bears, 28 states, perfectly legal to buy and sell any exotic animal and have as a pet.
Wow.
And then it was kind of weird just right after, you know, I had a hay farm in Louisiana, and so I would be selling hay, and at the auctions, I would see the babies for sale. And it was just weird how just one thing on top of another, I just started learning, you know, what was happening, and disgusted and sad for our animals and how disposable they are. Because I think at that time in the 90s, everyone believed the animals either lived at the zoo or the circus.
Yeah.
And not in somebody's backyard or basement.
For sure. So back in the hay farm part of the story, what kind of animals were you talking about that they were selling the babies?
They would hold up the baby exotic animals and sell them.
Okay, so it wasn't more domestic animals, even though it was a hay farm. It was still exotic animals, which was...
Well, the auctions were for cattle, but they would sell, you know, miscellaneous things. And then that's how I kind of discovered the exotic animal auctions. And at the exotic animal auctions, all exotic animals.
So they'd say, hey, we're going to be auctioning off cattle. But the people in the know, the wink-wink people, I guess, understood that a tremendous range of other animals would be available.
Exactly.
Wow. Jeez. All right. And so I guess because you were from San Diego originally, when you decided, hey, I'm going to, knowing what I've known and seeing what I've seen and knowing what not to do, I'm going to open my own facility. I guess you thought, well, let me return to San Diego, which I know the territory, and probably had a good idea about where you could maybe open such a facility.
Right. Right before I moved back to San Diego, there were a couple leopards that needed a home, and there wasn't really a home for them because, you know, once they get big, a lot of people can't handle them and they don't want them anymore. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So Mark and I, we decided that we would pay to build the leopards a cage on a lady's property. And the deal was they would spay and neuter them, they would never be bred, and they would live there for life. Well, we didn't even finish the building the habitat like a month later, and she bred the cats and was selling them.
Sometimes those people aren't great at keeping their word, I've noticed over the years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's when I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it myself, and I'm going to do it right. And that's what we've done.
Yeah. But still, there must have been, even though you were exposed to these other facilities and you saw what they were doing and, again, what not to do. But still, that's a huge step to take. What was there any particular elements that you thought, well, it's a problem that needs help and I can help, but I don't know about opening a facility? I mean, were you debating yourself right up to the moment you opened the new sanctuary?
Nope. I knew I wanted to open a sanctuary, and I knew I wanted to expose the problem because a lot of people don't even know what's going on. I do think if I had it to do over again, I would probably have done a lot more. I would have, you know, because it cost a lot of money. I would have put a lot more money doing undercover work and literally exposing what's going on. Because not any one sanctuary, including us, can rescue all the animals. So, like, every animal that we take, we have to be able to provide a perfect quality of life and for life. So big cats live 20 years. Bears, like, we have a bear that's 34 years old. So we've got to provide for each and every one of these animals for their life all the while we're being their voice and trying to get change for them. So it doesn't keep happening. You know, we had to learn not to take, like, animals from certain people because then you're enabling them to breed more. We want to stop the problem.
Just like the woman he made that agreement with and turned around and quickly was breeding once again.
Exactly. So now, like, if we take an entertainment animal, there's literally a contract that they're not going to acquire any animals. They're not going to be in the business anymore. And we try not to take the cub petting animals from people who are going to continue doing the cub petting, because then that just makes it where more animals are bred and disappear and are killed or sold off for their body parts. And that's what we're trying to stop, is the trade and the trafficking.
Yeah. Well, I would think some people unfamiliar with the sanctuary thus far might be quite surprised to learn that there are bears and big cats and other animals living just in East San Diego. I mean, my sister lived many years ago in Miramar, which I think is not too awfully far from where the sanctuary is. So
about a half hour.
Yeah. So, again, I think people more and more obviously over the years have become aware of it, but it's probably jarring for some people to figure out just...
Now, that's one of our biggest problems. No one knows we're here, and we work all over the country.
What do you think slowing that awareness?
I don't know, because the news media helps us. We have lots of social media. I think it's just taken a while for people to know we're here in San Diego.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But we have great community support and...
Yeah, it seems like there's cool events that happen, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's an opportunity to actually stay overnight at the sanctuary and sort of...
We've got a beautiful Airbnb, a beautiful retreat here. It's 2 bedrooms, a king and a queen room, and you have access to one of the biggest habitats with the tigers. It's kind of right outside the porch, and there's a huge venue out there and an outdoor kitchen and fire pit, and there's a couple swimming pools for people and jacuzzi, and super pretty here. You can see all the stars, and there's, you know, no city lights, and you can hear all the animals at night, even the wild ones like the peacocks and the coyotes.
Wow. Well, I might be booking my stay as soon as I get off the air. This sounds pretty amazing. So we should let people know, as we will throughout our conversation, that the website is Lions, Tigers, and Bear, the word and spelled out, lionstigersandbears.org. So if you want to find out more as we're going along here or find out about the Airbnb opportunity or other things, that's the place to go. And if you just tuned in now, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Bobby Brink, founder and director of Lions, Tigers, and Bears, 140-acre animal rescue sanctuary and educational facility in East San Diego, housing those exact animals as well as others. So if you have questions for Bobby or would like to offer a comment about captive exotic animals, sanctuaries, zoos, one kind or another, and so on, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So, as we may discuss later in the context of some of your animals there, one path to sanctuaries often involves animals rescued from roadside zoos. Can you explain what a roadside zoo is? I mean, it's loosely self-explanatory, the name itself, but there's quite a variety of types. Maybe you could just sort of give us a sense of what they are and kind of the range of roadside zoos that you've had to deal with over the years.
Right. Roadside zoos are unaccredited facilities that, exploit and use animals for nothing more than profit. And most of the time, the animals are living in just absolutely deplorable conditions, and they're not properly cared for. And we have rescued many animals from closing roadside zoos. And a lot of these roadside zoos, they'll use the animals, they'll breed them as babies so people can hold them with it to get their picture taken. So please, please don't take your picture with wild animals anymore. There's no legitimate facilities left in our country that do what we call the cub petting or the animal handling for photos, because after they're too big to do the photos to these places, they're completely disposable. And there's no federal tracking, so a lot of them disappear, they die, they're sold for their body parts, or they just live in these teeny, overcrowded, filthy cages. And a lot of times there's, you know, we'll work on some of these cases for years and we still can't get some of the animals out of some of these places.
So are there one or two particularly egregious roadside zoo experiences that come to mind from your work over the years trying to rescue them from those kinds of circumstances?
Yeah, just recently we rescued some animals from a closing roadside zoo in Maryland. And it took so long for the legal part in the case to get the animals that literally tigers and lions laid on the ground and died there.
Oh, geez.
But we were able to finally get the judge to help get the animals out of there. So we moved 2 Himalayan black bears here, Susie and Sally, who were just grossly overweight because all they were feeding them were donuts and pastries. And they've lost a couple hundred pounds each since they've been here, and they look great now. And we also brought a llama and some mini horses from there. And then the reptiles went up to a zoo, and a couple other animals we drove to another sanctuary, like some emus and some quatermundi.
Wow.
So, yeah, but it took years, and it's really sad that animals had to lay there and literally suffer before we could get them out. And we do have some other places, you know, that we're currently working on. And, you know, we try to do everything we can to get the owners to do the right thing. But I don't know, some of these people, they don't do the right thing.
And if they don't, if they kind of just say, no, I'm keeping my animals, even though they're living in these horrible conditions and ill and not well cared for at any level. Is that where then officials move in? But that's, it sounds like from your last story, that that's also the thing that can take a protracted process because of whatever legal procedure is necessary to actually seize the animals?
Right. It takes forever. And the laws are state by state. Some of them are even county or parish by parish. So sometimes the animals have no protection. Animals still have no rights. This is one thing I'd like to change in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So it makes it really hard because they're still considered property. And it's really hard to take away people's property no matter how they're caring for it.
So is that the main barrier? Like if you identified like this place in Maryland that you just described, and obviously it's really poorly run and the animals are poorly treated and ill and probably getting a horrible diet, including donuts and whatever for Susie and Sally. So isn't that whatever photos or videos or expert testimony from animal experts or whatever, why wouldn't that be enough for an official that's making that decision to say, yeah, you're right. I mean, I know animals are property, so that's probably the big snag. But it seems like in the face of that kind of evidence, someone would be hard-pressed to say, well, no, they should continue in this way with the people that have been caring for them this way and treating them this way.
It's amazing, and I don't have an answer. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an answer, and it takes us sometimes forever. And we work with a lot of other animal organizations, so it's not only us. It's just it takes a lot of time, and we all work together. We'll all testify together.
Must be super frustrating.
It's very hard to continue to be nice to the people.
Yeah, but sure.
We've got to do what we got to do to get the animals out of there.
Yeah. Well, this kind of reminds me of something I was curious about anyway, which is, wanted to get your perspective on the impact of the Tiger King series. I mean, owing to kind of a confluence of factors, I mean, many of us obviously were in COVID lockdown and people were Netflixing, you know, as much as possible. So Tiger King sort of became a weirdly timed kind of powerful cultural moment. But looking back now, to what extent do you view Tiger King as at least partially positive, like sort of educational event, spotlighting the activities of Joe Exotic and others of that ilk, like Doc Antle and their operations, so making it clear that those animals were being exploited and often abused? And did that help in your overall pursuit of the kind of work you've been doing for these last 20, 30 years?
Did a little bit, but I feel like we're going backwards right now a little bit. So I met Joe and his brother in the 90s before his brother died. And they were crazy then. What they were doing was just, and you would go tell people and people would look at you like you're crazy, like, oh yeah, yeah, that's not happening. But they were breeding every year hundreds of baby animals. And they use them for the photo ops, and then they would just disperse them across the country as pets to other facilities. The same with Doc Antle. But when in the day when you would tell people that, they would almost look at you like you're the crazy one and that's not really happening, but it was happening. And then myself and my team, this is the first time since the 90s I've ever seen the DOJ pick up a case. And they finally, the Department of Justice finally picked up this case, and we helped move the 70 cats. We had three trucks and trailers going to move those last 70 Tiger King cats across the country into our place. Jem and Zoe, the tigers, are here with us and will live their life here. But luckily, Joe is finally in jail. And if you notice, it's not like he really went to jail for all of the animal abuse. He went to jail mostly for murder for hire.
Right, Carol Baskin.
Most times when we go into these places with the first responders and they're serving the warrant on the people, they secure the people, we go in and get the animals because your basic police officer isn't trained to go in and get a tiger out of a bedroom or a basement or a garage. And that's where we help them. Then they go back and get whatever it is they're there for. Most times it's drugs, weapons, child endangerment, things like that. That's what they're getting in trouble. And then there's the animals. And
yeah,
a lot of times it's big cats and then reptiles and primates.
Yeah, well, it sounds like even now, like even in the case of Joe Exotic and Tiger King, that still, as you just kind of noted, the things that he was arrested for initially, or at least mainly imprisoned for, really weren't animal related. So even then, even as extreme and high profile with a hugely watched series on Netflix, whatever, it still wasn't the animal abuse or exploitation that really got him in trouble.
Exactly. And then explain to me why Jeff Lowe is still out of jail, never done a day in jail with all that animal abuse, even when his 70, we were there. In one day, we moved 70 cats. We moved all 70 of his animals. They had served him a warrant, and he's out of jail. I have no explanation. That well, man should be in jail for all he's done.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Well, I've just got an email in from one of our listeners. It says, is there a database to report animal abuse sideshows, it says here?
We keep a pretty good list of, you know, who we think is doing what, and then we just slowly work on it. And a lot of times we'll have, like, where people get on our email list so we can communicate with them to help us write letters to authorities and constituents when the time comes when we need help.
Yeah, but it sounds like, if I follow this emailer's question, it sounds like there's not like a central database where you could say, hey, I went to this facility and I saw this going on and I want to report this abuse, so it goes on record and starts to build a, you know, kind of a history.
No, because again, all the rules are like state by state or wherever, like, you know, there's still places that you can own a tiger as a pet. Until the federal bill, I worked on the Big Cat Public Safety Act 18 years. Tippi Hedren and I were the first ones to walk the Capitol trying to get the first bill through. And then, you know, time and time again, we would fail. When we walked the first one through and tried to get constituents to sign on, we immediately got shut down. And at that time, it was Kenneth Feld who owned Ringling Brothers Circus. And then it just slowly got to, I think, like the fourth or fifth time we introduced the bill. And then it was finally when Ringling Brothers was dropping out that we finally started making momentum. And then getting the zoo on board was really, really hard, getting the AZA on board. And then finally, it took 18 years. And it only covers big cats. So it doesn't cover wolves. It doesn't cover primates, reptiles, and bears.
Wow.
So a lot of times now, maybe they're not allowed to do the cub petting with big cats, but they'll just go get bears instead. Or quadrumanes, or lemurs, or some other primate, or some other animal, so they can continue to breed animals and make their living exploiting the animals.
So that's really, even with whatever legislation's in place, over all these years, that's really, for these people, where the money is the petting of whatever kind of small animal it is, and the photos that are taken with those. I mean, that's, I guess, just generates so much dough for them that, what, even if they can't do big cats, they'll, like you say, they'll do whatever other animals that still people want to have a chance to pet or to have their pictures taken with at all costs.
Yeah, so please don't take your photo. And, you know, cruise ships, I've gone on the cruise ships and talk in the theater, you know, when people go for the entertainment, and we'll have a little 15-minute presentation that asks them not to get off the cruise ship and get their picture taken with the animals there, because the only way it's going to stop is if people stop supporting it.
Yeah, when it's like this and other things, it's so much about educating people who, on some level, really couldn't really see, like, what's so bad about it. I'm just having my picture taken.
They lie to people, and there'd be big signs that says it's conservation, and they're saved that animal, you know, it was rescued from the mother, and it's all a big lie. I call it conservation. It's not true conservation. They're literally breeding these animals. Most of them are inbred. They don't care who they breed to what. A lot of them have major health issues because they've been yanked from the mother before their eyes are even open, before they're even 6 or 8 days old. They pull the baby from the mama. It's really sad.
Yeah. Well, no, I totally hear you. I'm probably, for a lot of listeners, I'm probably Mr. One Note on the conservation thing, just because it is such a complete scam. And
these animals can't be put back in the wild.
Right.
That's not conservation.
Right. So the zoos and other operations that sort of build on their so-called conservation efforts it's completely phony. But
this is what I teach all my intern students that come here, my young people. You know, they're the generation that's going to make the decision. Do we continue to put animals in cages and breed them? You know, they're going to be their upcoming decision.
Yeah. And so you said, when I first brought up Tiger King and Joe Exotic, that you thought things were better, that it did help. But then it sounded like you thought things were swung back slightly the other direction. Because the other question I sort of had in response to the Tiger King impact was, for some viewers, was it almost, unfortunately, like a tutorial of sorts? Like, here's how you can make some dough at an animal's expense by doing this, this, and this. As
exactly.
As presented on Tiger King.
Exactly. And then the bill, needed to include more species. So now, you know, we're gearing up for next year to start, you know, working, but it needs to be multi-species. So when we get the next bill through, it does cover the primates, the wolves, the bears, because these are the animals that the people hurt.
Yeah.
You know, bears, they'll put these bears on concrete floors, and they're small, like in the state of California. And the state of California has pretty good laws, but the square footage for a bear is 350 square feet. That's all they require for a bear. So they'll put them on the minimum square footage on a concrete floor. It's so bad for their joint. And then they'll rub their teeth on the fence because they're bored to death. And bears live 30 years. It's so wrong. I have bears here that had never stepped on dirt until they came here. Never seen the open sky until they came here.
Well, this brings us to bears, which I definitely want to spend a moment or two talking about. But let me also let folks know, again, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Bobby Brink, founder and director of Lions, Tigers, and Bears, 140-acre animal sanctuary in East San Diego, holding those very animals and others. You're invited to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So at this point, I think people, at least people who care about animals, are quite familiar with sanctuaries that house tigers and lions, other big cats. There are just so many of those facilities across the U.S. But what seems far less common are facilities that provide sanctuary to bears. And yours, of course, does both. I love bears. Talk to me about some of the unique challenges of caring for bears in contrast to caring for big cats.
I think bears are a little busier. They need a lot more space. They don't sleep as much as cats. They're a little bit harder to care for. We are actually trying to raise funds to build a few more bear habitats right now because we know some bears that we're desperately trying to get out of where they are. And we'll need a place to put them. And bears get in trouble a lot, so they get into the neighborhoods and they'll start going in people's swimming pools and trash cans. And in California, they get three chances before the authorities will put them down. So it's always nice if we have a place where those bears can go. But bears need space. They need dirt. They need rocks. They need a swimming pool to, you know, immerse their water. They need running water. And they need things to keep them busy. So, like, our keepers are always trying to hide things so that they have to forage, you know, actually forage for their food. And they're trying to keep them thinking. And bears are not a real, you know, easy animal to care for.
So they need a lot of enrichment. It sounds like things that are challenging them all the time to keep from boredom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have a caller here. Let's take that caller and get them involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bobby Brink.
Hi. My name is Connie. I live in East Pasco County, Florida. I was just calling to thank your guest for the work that she's doing. I'm really saddened by the situation that exists in this country and on this planet for animals, and I totally agree with you as far as animal rights go. The story you told about lobbying for 18 years, I think you said, with Tippi Hedren to get a bill passed is just, I don't know what to do to wake humans up about the treatment of animals. And I'm just wondering, how do you keep going? Because I'm dealing with my own little situation here with TNVR cats being taken inappropriately in my neighborhood. And I just, it feels like a tireless fight that I'm fighting myself. And I also just want to say, I just made a quick donation to your organization. Thank you.
Wow. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Connie. You know, I think that animals keep me going. I see these animals sometimes, you know, like, for instance, Sugar Bear, one of the bears we rescued from Ohio. He lived in a small corn crib. He'd never been out of that 10-foot corn crib. And we moved about 30 animals when we were moving him off the same property. We put him in the very front of my trailer hauler. So he had like a rolling cage inside of the trailer. He made the whole trip to deliver like 10 different animals with us. And every time we'd open the door, he was just fine. Happy to get a treat, happy to have a snack. And we brought him home, and all the animals go through a medical quarantine. So they're in a smaller area where they get to know their keeper and know the veterinarian, and they go through all the veterinarian, but, you know, so we can make sure they're healthy before we put him over with the other bears. And we were going to introduce him to five other black bears. So then we put them in their bedrooms when we do move them to their new habitat. And their bedrooms are small, and they're the safety place where we can lock them up while the keepers get out and service their habitats. And then it's also where we can do medical, or if there's a fire, we can evacuate, all that kind of stuff. Well, he was fine. And then when we opened the door to let him out in the habitat to give him some freedom, he was scared to death. He was running back and forth. Mm. So every day we'd open the door for like an hour, open the door for 2 hours, open the door for half a day. And a few weeks later, we could leave the door open for the whole day, and then we'd leave it open overnight. And then we saw him touching the dirt outside with one paw. And then finally, he would step out and step back in. And then one day, we all looked out, and he was sitting like a little kid in the sandbox. He had dirt piled up on his legs, and he was just playing in the dirt. That's the paycheck. And
yeah.
Then now he, of course, covers the whole habitat. So now he knows how to be a bear.
That's so great. And that, back to Connie's question, and sort of, I think many people's probably similar question, is how you keep going in the face of such challenges and adversity and, unfortunately, often awful people mistreating various animals. I mean, seeing that bear hanging out and enjoying himself, I think it was him, in that enclosure with all that dirt piled up, and like you say, being a bear, that probably keep you going for the next few years, just that situation alone.
Yep, one animal at a time, and you know, and then seeing him play in the pool and jump up and down and watch the water splash, you know, just priceless. And all we can do is one animal at a time, and then we got to get laws changed. So just getting more people on board to help, and more people to know, you know, a lot of people want to help, but they don't even know how, and they don't know what's actually happening to the animals.
Well, I have another bear question or two, but while we're on the topic of how people can help, are there certain things that people listening that feel moved to do so could do to help enhance the prospects of legislation or anything to work on this, getting some better laws with wider enforcement passed?
One thing that really helps us is if you can sign up to be on our email list and ask to be on the one where we for legislation, and a lot of times we'll email out where we need letters written or phone calls made. And then social media is priceless, just sharing our stuff with everybody on social media so we can help to educate people and get more people to know what we're doing. So when we do need help, we can reach out, and depending on what state we're working on and what bills we're working on, because we're getting ready to start, you know, next year, pretty fresh on some new things.
All right, so we should say that website is lionstigersandbears.org, and sign up for the email messages, and that way you can be alerted if there's any sort of efforts for legislation or anything else that they could use your help. And sometimes it's a simple matter of like just sending an email, or even less arduous, copying and pasting an email that is provided sometimes by Lions and Tigers and Bears or other organizations. So, but the impact can be tremendous when somebody, legislators' inbox is flooded with those kinds of appeals, they take notice.
And then when you're out and about and you're going to travel or visit animals, please only visit accredited animal sanctuaries, accredited by Global Federation, Association of Sanctuaries, or American Sanctuary Association. You know, because if they're not accredited, there's most likely a reason they're not accredited. So don't support them.
All right. So back to, I got to come back just because I'm such a bear, and I got to come back to a question or two about bears. And you talked about the challenges for bears and how much they need to be stimulated and kept busy and engaged. How much do those challenges vary by species? For instance, how is a Himalayan black bear housed and maybe cared for differently than, say, a grizzly bear?
Himalayan black bears are a lot more active than the grizzly bears.
Okay.
They are Himalayans. They don't really hibernate. Where we are in San Diego, there's always food on the ground, you know, whether they're eating the grass or they're eating an ant or bugs or whatever. They always have access to food. The snow never completely covers the ground here. We get snow, but just enough to cover the ground for a day, and it's gone in 2 days. So most of our bears don't go into a full hibernation. But the grizzly bears are funny. They'll pull all their stuff into the den, and they'll make themselves this big den, like they'll build themselves a big den like they're going to hibernate, but then they come out and eat. So we do have like our sugar bear, the one I was telling you about, because he was forced to hibernate in Ohio. He will go to, you know, into torpor for most of the year. So they are a little bit different in that sense. The Himalayans are standing up on their back legs a lot more, and they're more into getting things off of the trees and up higher than the grizzly bears, but they're bears. They're all a lot alike.
Yeah. Is there a particular bear that you have a special soft spot for?
I love them all, but I think Sugar Bear, the black bear that I told you about, and then Rocky, our bear Rocky,
Yeah.
He's a retired entertainment animal. Same thing. Spent his whole life in a small cage, but then he was carted around for commercials and to be used for movies and things like that. He was literally trained to stand up and bite people on the neck. And he had a new trainer learning how to train, and he bit and killed the trainer. So of no fault of Rocky's, he was taught to attack people, and he killed somebody. So,
Go ahead, Bobby. Sorry.
We were lucky enough that he was not put down by the authorities, and he was just a bear being a bear, and he gets to live his life out here. So he's pretty special.
Yeah.
Pretty special guy.
Well, I knew that story, but I don't think what I knew is that he was specifically trained to bite people on the neck, which, I mean, is right on the surface just seems completely nuts. But anyway, so we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Bobby, but is there, well, I guess I got to ask just because I'm sure people ask about the name. So naming the sanctuary, I mean, it's descriptive and it's truth in advertising. I mean, those are the animals that are there, but I'm guessing there's kind of a wink there. I mean, you could have put them in a different order, bears, tigers, and lions or whatever. So was this kind of just a thing to have fun with and sort of maybe serve as a marketing element when you said lions, tigers, and bears?
Well, I started trying to start Lions, Tigers, and Bears in 1998, and my father-in-law was dying at the time, and we would go and visit him every week, and from his ranch we would go hiking, and he'd always say, watch out for those lions, tigers, and bears out there. So that's actually where we got lions, tigers, and bears, and that's when we started calling it lions, tigers,
so it's less Wizard of Oz reference than your father-in-law's kind of comment when you guys would head out hiking.
Yeah, I think he thought we were crazy doing what we were going to do, but...
Okay. Well, it's a good kind of crazy because all these years later, you've helped a bunch of animals and you still are. So okay. Well, I think we have reached the end of our time. We've been speaking with Bobby Brink. She's the founder and director of Lions, Tigers, and Bears in the Eastern San Diego area. Again, the website is lionstigersandbears.org, and they're very active on social media, which you can easily search for based on the name of the organization, and help out with their legislative efforts. And already, like Connie did there, send them a few bucks if you have a chance, and help support their great work. So, Bobby, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals, and all your great work on behalf of our animal friends over all these years.
Thank you so much. Thank you to everyone. Thank you, Connie. Have a great day.
Thank you. In a moment, I'll speak with photographer Elliot Ross about his new book, Crows Ascending, a poignant study of the birds taking flight near his San Francisco apartment, having manipulated the images in intriguing ways. It holds a metaphorical connection to other events, as we'll hear about as well when we discuss Crows Ascending with Elliot in just a moment here on Talking Animals. Right now, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with Mike Corbiglia, offering, I think, a relevant piece given the conversation we just had with Bobby Brink. Here's I'm a Bear, taken from Mike Corbiglia's Sleepwalking piece in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
This is the first time I remember sleepwalking. I always had dreams about wild animals when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I had this recurring dream for years that there was a bear walking in the front door of my house, literally opening the front door, which is the scariest part when you think about it. A bear with opposable thumbs. Because if a bear can open a door, the sky's the limit. I don't have a plan for that one. My plan was the door. In the dream, I would hide in the kitchen cupboard with my sister Patty, and it's pitch black, and I'm scared to death, and I open up the door crack to let in some light. I look next to me, and Patty is gone, and she's been replaced by the bear. It doesn't kill me, but it gives me kind of a coy Jack Nicholson-y look. Like, will I kill you? And that's when I wake up. I had that dream for years, and then eventually I attempted to face this lifelong fear. Patty and I went to Alaska. We went to this place called Katmai National Park, which is one of these places that has so many bears that when you arrive, they take you to what's called bear orientation. And they teach you, and it seems counterintuitive, but if you ever see a bear walking towards you, you're actually supposed to clap and make the bear aware of your presence. Like, I'm right here, bear. I'm right here. I'm Mike, and you're a bear. And we're okay with each other. And when they told me this, I was like, oh, I'm going to be murdered by a bear. Because that seems like basting yourself in barbecue sauce, you know? It's like, I'm right here, bear.
and I taste fantastic. I've applied condiments so that I'll be less bland.
That was Mike Birbiglia in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called I'm a Bear, taken from his show Sleepwalk With Me. Now it's time to speak with photographer Elliot Ross about his new book, Crows Ascending, on talking animals on WMNF. Good morning, Elliot.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. And let's jump in. So why crows? More specifically, I guess, as a person, what interests you about crows? And as a photographer, what interests you about crows?
Well, crows were right outside my window, and I've been photographing animals for years now. And crows have this way of transforming themselves when they're grooming themselves, when they're they really totally change shape, and that's what originally drew me to photographing them. But then when I moved locations, I moved from one apartment to another, to where the crows are really, I'm really kind of in a crow superhighway, where they
okay.
They seem to be, I'm in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they seem to spend the night on Telegraph Hill. I'm not really sure, because they kind of disappear in the distance. And, but at around dawn, they come in a huge flock, or murder, as is popularly, as they're popularly called.
Yeah.
A flock of crows. And they come, and sometimes they, in between, they rest or gather for some reason on the roofs around where my apartment is. And I began photographing them originally with the intent of capturing more of these transformative shapes. But then I accidentally photographed one as it was about to take wing from the roof, and it became this kind of almost angelic image. This anyway, it was quite beautiful. So,
well, so it's possible that most people listening haven't yet had a chance to see the book. Can you describe the at least some of the images and how you altered the photographs, and why? I assume probably to partly at least depict the transformation that you're talking about, but for other reasons as well.
Well, I didn't really alter the photographs except by cropping, a little bit to allow the images to be larger and occupy the frame.
So what we see is really just the effect of the birds taking flight, and that's why we see them kind of in, obviously blurry isn't the right word, especially talking to a photographer, but kind of this almost celestial kind of element to them.
Yeah. Well, as far as my influencing how the images are taken, they're taken at a lower shutter, and that's why you see all this movement.
Yeah.
So it's the shutter speed is, somewhere in the fraction of a second. Normally, I would have been shooting at, say, a 200th of a second, but instead I'm shooting at more like a 10th of a second.
Yeah.
So that you capture all this movement that is never seen by the human eye.
And there's kind of an important context here, really, at least I gather, for what drew you to presenting prose in that way. I mean, there were things going on at the time, and there's other connections. Maybe you can address those.
Well, it was during the beginning of the pandemic when I had been ill in January of 2020, and after I was released from the hospital, the pandemic expanded and became such a threat to my health that I could barely ever leave my apartment. So for two years, fortunately, I have many windows here, so I felt like I was still part of the world.
Yeah,
but I couldn't I couldn't really go out that much, and I concentrated on photographing the crows. Meanwhile, my younger brother Michael, who's been in a home for people with intellectual disability.
Yeah.
He was in his first year of life, he developed epilepsy or seizure disorder, and it really damaged his brain to the point where he never really developed beyond the intellectual capacity of a 1-year-old.
Mm.
So He contracted, along with many people who were institutionalized, he contracted COVID, and he had severe asthma, so he was hospitalized. Fortunately, he pulled through, but his seizure disorder caused him to have Parkinson's disease.
Oh, geez.
And that really led to his death some months later.
I'm so sorry. So, and so the book is dedicated, I guess, to Michael.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. In the middle of shooting, I should say there are 20 images in the series, and after printing about a dozen, I started thinking about the context in which I had created the series and how much the pandemic had to do with it. And then, of course, the major event for me was his death and not being able to be there. But we had a Zoom call right before he died, and that was my last contact with him.
Yeah. Well, sorry about your loss, and
thank you.
That you could dedicate this book to him. And just so, because we're just about running out of time at the moment, Elliot, I'm afraid,
okay.
but I want to find out how folks can buy the book. Anywhere books are sold, or is there a specific website that people should visit to do so?
Yes, they can go to shiltpublishing.com, and that's Schilt Publishing, all one word, of course,
yeah.
No spaces.
Okay, because it's quite a sort of eloquent meditation, and obviously, as we've talked about here briefly, there's a few things that all figure into the book and the way the images are presented, and it's really quite striking. So,
thank you for that.
Yeah, I really responded to the book. So, I'm afraid we're out of time at this point, Elliot. But good luck with the book. It's called Crows Ascending.
Much.
And again, it's Schilt, Schilt Publishing.com to look into the book. It's like a beautiful sort of miniature coffee table book. So, thanks again, Elliot. Take care.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Bye bye. Coming up on WMF, it's The Conversation with Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. Today with Sam Vall as well, and then we shift back to music with Jim Bannon and Nancy C. all coming up shortly here on WMF Tampa. Thanks again for listening.